Hey, it's Friday. Congratulations. You have made it through another week of the Trump administration. It's Mike McEntee here on AM 950. It's a warm, I guess what passes for warm here in Minnesota in March. A nice day out there. And, you know, I'm not gonna complain too loud because I've had too many marches where there's been like, a 14 inches of snow suddenly dumped on us. And we're not having that right now. So, yep, it's slippery. Yeah, it's a little cold, but it's not that bad. It's not that bad. Hey, Brett, I have to ask you because the Blue State Ball, we're doing the contest right now where people have to send us the code word and they get entered in the tickets. Is that still going on or is that when's the deadline?
Yeah, we're sending out another newsletter on Monday. So pretty much enter by then. We'll announce it on Tuesday.
Well, now it's on Tuesday, and there's a code word in there. And I'm not going to give out the code word because that would kind of defeat the purpose of the contest. But who came up with the code word? This was a hilarious code word. Was that a committee decision or?
I can't even say because I don't want to give any hints to giving it
away. Okay. All right.
But it's fitting, isn't it?
It's very fitting. I think it's very fitting. So if you haven't gotten the newsletter, you should sign up for the newsletter. You can just, you have to send an email to comment at am950radio.com and then we'll get you on the newsletter list and then you'll get a newsletter Monday and then you can enter in the contest. So do that because Blue State Ball VIP tickets at stake. And those are, you know, that's the top level. You get in there, get early, you get to meet Tom Hartman and Norman Goldman, kind of a little more one-on-one than you will later on in the night. So that's on March 10th. So be sure to do that. Hey, it is the end of the week, and it's been a heck of a week. And joining us to talk about what's been going on in Washington and elsewhere is Ellen Ratner from Talk Media News. Hi, Ellen. How you doing?
I'm doing okay, and I just wish I was coming out to Blue State Ball, but maybe next year.
Maybe next year. Maybe we can get you on the list for next year. You know, it's Sun Country,
know,
I think.
Tom is my good friend, and I love him.
Yeah, and I think Sun Country flies between here and Washington, D.C., and it's and Delta, so
right.
Pretty regular service.
Exactly.
So, yeah. All right. Okay. We'll hold that in thought for next year. Donald Trump, I mean, it has been chaos in the White House this week. The whole back and forth that Trump had on gun control, first he was for it, and then suddenly after talking to the NRA, it seems like he's done a 180. Have we ever seen such behavior out of the White House? I mean, that's kind of a dumb question, but what does this say about the power of the NRA?
Well, it says that the NRA has an awful lot of power in Washington, and anybody who doesn't understand that doesn't understand Washington, D.C. They've raised a lot of money, and they give it away, and money talks in Washington.
Yeah, and it's not so much that they give it to candidates. It's that I think what I was reading is most of the money is spent on on ads that run for or against candidates. It doesn't go directly to them, and so everybody's really worried about being targeted by the NRA and getting an F, and then suddenly having to fight them on the airwaves.
Well, they not only have to fight them on the airwaves, they have to fight them, of course, locally, because the NRA puts a lot of money into local races. And that can be a big problem for people. And also, they get out the vote very effectively.
What's been the reaction, among conservatives, first to Trump embracing the whole idea of taking away your guns, something that Obama never said, but the conservatives said he was going to do, and then suddenly just reversing like this? What's been the reaction?
Well, I think they feel that they can pressure President Trump, and obviously they have. They feel like he was just talking out of school. That's the word around Washington. And that he's going to fall into line. That's what people are saying.
Now, he wasn't falling into line, I don't think, this morning when he suddenly announced a tariff on steel. This is something that's wide-ranging.
His own White House's advice. By his national security people and other people, because there is a provision in the trade deal that if for national security reasons they can raise tariffs. Well, you haven't seen China do it, you haven't seen India do it, and the problem is that President Trump is doing it, and he's claiming national security, but that's not going to go very far in terms of the whole world.
I mean, are we expecting that other nations then are just going to turn around and put tariffs back on us because of this?
I have no idea what other nations are going to do, but I would not be surprised at all if China doesn't do it, if our biggest trading partners, be it Canada, doesn't do it. I mean, that they could easily do it. And then what are we going to do? And as you know, the stock market dropped 500 points when this was announced.
Wow. Is that a referendum on Trump or not? He keeps saying the stock market's going up because of him.
Well, it's a referendum on this particular trade deal. And yes, it means that American jobs will be held in terms of steel. But on the other hand, you have to realize that how many American jobs come because of trade. So, you know, I don't know the particulars, but I know that if you're going to raise trade, you're going to raise it by 25%. That's a lot of money.
And this whole thing caught everybody just flat-footed. I mean, this is a lot like Trump's announcement of the Muslim ban. Suddenly, there's no memos, no nothing to carry it out. Everybody's just going, "Oh, I guess that's what we're doing." It just, I mean, this seemed to be something he just decided in a fit of rage, as opposed to thinking it through.
Well, he did that with the transgender ban too. He didn't tell the people in the military about it.
Well, this is a well-run business. I guess that's what we have here.
And it's interesting. I actually talked to somebody who was at CPAC, which is, where President Trump spoke, and it stands for Conservative Political Action Committee. And three transgender conservatives got up and were applauded, but that didn't make any of the news.
Hmm. No, that didn't. We certainly didn't hear about that. And as I kind of mentioned, the top of all this is just chaos. Hope Hicks, a name that a lot of people didn't know until this week outside of Washington. She's the communications director and has been kind of low key, but she's leaving now. What does that mean?
Well, we don't know what it means. What we do know is that her father is very important to her. And we're hearing via the grapevine that the father is the one that is pressuring her to leave, saying that Donald Trump is not somebody that can be trusted, et cetera. That's what we're hearing now. I don't know whether that's true or not, but that's what the grapevine is saying in Washington, that the reason she left is because her father pressured her to do so.
And it has nothing to do with the fact that she went before Congress and refused to answer a bunch of questions, but said that she'd
been... Now we think that she's going to be talking to the special counsel, and she's going to say pretty much everything. But again, we don't know whether that's true or not. That's just the rumor in Washington. And rumor can sometimes be right, and sometimes it can be wrong. But that's what we're hearing.
And speaking of the investigation... we haven't heard anything in the last couple of days. What's going on? Have we heard anything? What's going to be happening next with the Mueller investigation?
Well, again, what we hear is that he's collecting evidence, that he's getting people to talk on a lower level. And then, of course, there's the Jared Kushner issue. And did they try and get the Qatari government to give them money? And then when they didn't, did they get the Saudis to act against them? Again, all of this is just going into what I call the soup, and we don't know what is actually the truth, and we're probably not going to know it for a while, but we will know it eventually. Comes out.
We hope the truth comes out here, unless something obstructs justice. I can't imagine what that might be. Justice should be marching forward.
A lot of people are saying that he could pardon her. But the problem is if she talks to Mueller and he pardons her in terms of an ability to not go to prison, well, that's one thing. But can he pardon her so that she doesn't talk to Mueller? I don't think so. That's the big question.
And again, the chaos when all this is going on, all this stuff is going on. Donald Trump today decides to pick a fight on Twitter with Alec Baldwin, of all people.
Of all people. Why don't you just leave it alone, watch Saturday Night Live, or not watch it, but if he's obsessed with people depicting him, for sure, and let it go. Just don't respond. Don't give the news media or Alec Baldwin or anybody else fodder. But he puts it out there and then people respond. I've never seen anything like it in my life.
I think this came up because, and again, because Donald Trump apparently gets his morning briefing from Fox and Friends, and Fox and Friends was doing a story about how Alec Baldwin was saying he was growing tired of portraying Trump on, you know, on Saturday Night Live and elsewhere. And apparently that triggered this. It's amazing to me that what triggers Donald Trump.
He watches TV, whether it be Fox and Friends or something else. He watches television, and then he tweets. And actually, he made a couple of major spelling mistakes when he wrote the first Alec Baldwin tweet, and then he deleted it and then corrected it, but he didn't correct the content.
Yeah, or somebody deleted it and corrected it for him. I'm not sure which. It's
right.
That's always
that
been a little bit.
That might have happened. You're absolutely correct.
But Baldwin kind of shot back on this whole thing, saying that Trump. I think he said, "I'm looking forward to portraying Donald Trump through the impeachment trial and going back to Mar-a-Lago and the presidential library that will be something that you can go through in 5 minutes and include porn star numbers." I mean, it was just kind of an interesting rant that he put out.
Well, it's true. Listen, if you're going to get into a fight with the chief executive of the United States of America, it's not, you know, it's going to make all the headlines, but it's definitely not going to be pretty these days.
No, it's not. It's not. Next week, we have what looked before like was going to be a big, big deal, the DACA deadline on March 5th. Now that's not such a big deal, I think, is it?
Well, again, probably Congress will extend it to some degree. The president probably will continue it through the summer until he can get an agreement. I want to go back to the budget because originally, when the budget deadline happened, September 30th, he extended it till mid-December, saying that would give Congress time to develop a budget. Well, they didn't, and then it got extended, and now it's extended until the 25th of March. So you have a situation where these deadlines keep on getting extended, and Congress does not come to any agreement.
So we're looking at late March is when we could have another showdown on the budget. What are the forces that are going to be in play there? And the last time it was DACA, and that was a big portion of this thing. What are the Democrats going to try to get in exchange from the Republicans or vice versa on the budget this time?
Well, a lot of this is going to depend on the budget for the Pentagon and how they're going to be using it. Whether the housing, you know, this just came out about the HUD secretary, although he canceled it when he supposedly found out about it. But who knows what he really knew and when he knew it. A $31,000 dining room set for his extended room. And
we're talking about Ben Carson
so
here.
Now they're going to be taking a look at that budget. The president has actually cut something like $6 billion out of the HUD budget. So each individual budget will be looked at and seeing where the cuts are and how that relates to the Democrats' priorities and the Republicans' priorities.
Yeah, I think we were talking about Ben Carson. There was the guy, and he's denied.
That's right.
It was interesting. He issued that statement not through, you know, his department, but through a friend, which was just kind of odd. You know, how he's handling this. Again, everything in the Trump administration is kind of odd in how things are being handled, but that just struck me as very odd in how you communicate something on an official basis through a friend. That's weird.
But he has done that since he took over that job, actually.
Has he? Okay. All right.
He's used his friends and communicated through them and not communicated through his communication shop, except for routine things. It's really been pretty interesting.
So anything else we should be looking for next week popping up in Washington, D.C.?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously Congress will be back in session. Budget is going to be huge, and they are still fighting about it. I think that the tariff on the steel is going to be a huge issue, and how that gets handled and whether Congress steps in or not is going to be very big. So I think we should be looking at that. I think that what we also are going to be looking at is, again, what is the president going to be doing about, you know, and I know I just mentioned this, but trade, trade on all fronts is going to be an issue. And then, don't forget, President Putin sort of did some saber rattling
his missile,
about nukes. And the question is, what is going to be done on that front? Is the United States going to respond in any way? Now, also, don't forget, we had the ambassador to Mexico, not a political appointee, because usually only about a third of the ambassadors are political appointees, places like Port of St. James that don't really matter to us that much, or France. But this was a career employee ending their career as ambassador to Mexico. That just doesn't happen, and that cannot be overlooked as a huge problem. He's got problems in the State Department.
He's got problems with the State Department, but doesn't seem to care about the State Department. We've had so many employees leaving there and so many appointments not made. It's just like, hey, I think his comment was, if it's important on foreign affairs, I'm going to be deciding it anyhow. So why do we need all these people? It just kind of boggles the mind on the idea that one guy can be running everything and it goes through him. I mean, set policy, but... I'm sorry. It just boggles my mind that we are running our government this way right now.
Well, we are, unfortunately, and unfortunately, like with the NRA decision and the meeting that happened around that, or the opioid meeting where he said that he's going to put people to death, like Duarte does in the Philippines, who are drug runners. Well, you know, if you don't believe in due process, which he did not believe around guns, and listen, I'm opposed to guns, so don't get me wrong about this, but I do believe in due process. And if you're going to say that about that, then what are you going to say about drug runners or people who are selling drugs? You're going to give them the death penalty? Is there going to be due process? Are you going to kill them on the street like Duarte does?
This is scary stuff. This is very scary stuff where we're going right now, and we're going to have to tune in next week to see what's going on. Ellen Ratner from Talk Media News. I appreciate checking in with us, and there's never a dull moment right now in Washington, so we'll have lots to talk about next week. Okay. Thank you very much, Ellen.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break here, folks, and when we get back, let's see, we got some news that got overlooked yesterday I want to get to from the 8th Congressional District, and phone calls, 952-946-6205. We got some that we want to catch up on, your comments. That's all next year on The Mike McEntee Show.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is All Digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
Tom Hartman here, letting you know that better energy is finally affordable. With All Energy Solar, Minnesota's number one local home solar provider, you can go solar with little or no money down. Qualified property owners could even see a return on investment in less than 1 year. Xcel Energy's Solar Rewards Incentive Program is available first come, first serve, and federal tax credits are available for a very limited time. Schedule your free solar assessment today. Visit allenergysolar.com. That's allenergysolar.com.
While shopping for a fireplace insert at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, I was amazed at all the choices. Not just gas, electric, or wood-burning, but also built-in or freestanding, and options in every style from antique to modern. The staff really listened to us, explained the options, and helped us choose a fireplace we absolutely love. Now it warms our hearts and our home every winter. Thank you, Woodland Stoves, for a great addition.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak, putting in a word for the EPA Burn Wise campaign. It has important information about clean burning fireplaces. This is an important part of our mission at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. We know that the fireplace has to work. Work with your life, work with your living space, and also be environmentally smart. Come see us. Learn to burn wise. We have over 35 working units on display at the corner of Riverside and East Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis. Visit our store in person or online at woodlandstoves.com.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
put it back.
Mike McEntee back with you here on AM 950. Earlier this week, before we got into all the gun news, we were talking with Aaron Brown about what's going on in this 8th Congressional District race. And yesterday, I missed this because we were just so focused on the gun stuff. But another announcement that's going to have a big impact on the race. Democratic State Representative Jason Metza is entering the race. And Aaron Brown told us this would be happening. But it is changing the complexion of the race. He is a third-term lawmaker. He is the latest Democrat to enter the race. We have the other Democrats are former FBI counterterrorism analyst Leah Pfeiffer. She was in the race already before Rick Nolan decided to drop out and retire at the end of his term. Former state representative Joe Radinovich is running, as is North Branch Mayor Kristen Hagan Kennedy and longtime Duluth news anchor Michelle Lee, who probably has the most name recognition of the candidates, at least in the Duluth area. But Metza has name recognition, too, and he brings deep connections to labor and an emphasis on mining issues. And this is a race, even though it reaches down into the Twin Cities, you know, media market, it's going to really focus on the Iron Range. And this will be, this is going to be an interesting 8th Congressional District. It's probably going to be a primary. It is probably going to be a primary because at this point, it's going to be hard for anybody to pull together the 60% is what you need. 60% to get the endorsement. You have five people splitting it. It's going to be hard to do that. On the Republican side, the other day we heard Stuart Mills isn't running, and so right now only Pete Stauber, the St. Louis County Commissioner, is running, and he has a clear path, which will allow him to get maybe just that much more momentum going into the November election, unless somebody else steps up to run against him, and that's always possible. Now, 952-946-6205 is a number that you can call now or anytime to leave us a message or live on the air here, talk about anything that we're talking about. And we got one of those calls yesterday. It just didn't get in because we were so darn busy. But Fred from Minneapolis called us, and he wanted to talk about the basic differences he sees between the Democrats and the Republican parties of today. And he talks about the dog whistles he hears in the GOP.
I've heard a lot of hand-wringing about how we Dems need to learn to fight more like Republicans, and a lot of hand-wringing about how the right has co-opted the flag and patriotism and Christianity. Well, to that, I would say, now, we've heard a lot from you guys for decades about how our real flag is the hammer and sickle, and I say to that, your flag is the stars and bars, the Confederate flag. Now, the stars and stripes, we stand for equality and diversity, voting rights, science, progress, intellect, efficient government, and the Enlightenment. The stars and bars, the other side, stands for oligarchy, white rights, voter suppression, anti-labor, anti-science, anti-intellectual, anti-progress, and putting religion and politics together. Our side, now my Jesus is the Jesus of Martin Luther King and Abe Lincoln. Your Jesus is Jefferson Davis, Strom Thurmond, Jerry Falwell. Now, I would also say that there's a lot of talk about the deep state on the other side, and those are the kind of people who used to always talk about the Jewish liberal occupation government, to which I say you are the Dixiecon Confederate occupation government. And I would refer to our president always as Jefferson Davis Trump or Donald J. Duke, by which I mean every time you get a right-wing troll, you say specifically, where do you differ, sir or ma'am? Where do you differ from David Duke on matters of policy? And if they don't know, you have them look it up and get back to you. Thank you.
Fred raising some pointed questions there. I don't know if I would phrase it exactly as he has, but indeed, there are some basic differences between the Democrats and the Republican parties of today. That is one way to define them. It's not going to be a way to define them that is probably going to get a conversation going between you and somebody of the other party, but that is one way you can do it. I'll tell you what, we are going to take a break here. But when we come back, we are going to be talking to a candidate who is running in a race in the that is suddenly open because of a legislator deciding not to run. We'll be doing that. But that's first, we're going to be listening to this week's Art Beat.
This is Art Beat for the Week. I'm Lori Fitz from Connections Radio Show. And today, I'm bringing you an event for this Sunday and one to plan for next Saturday on March 10th. For this coming Sunday, do your part for supporting gun control legislation and consider supporting the Protest Plays Project. The Protest Plays Project is a theater protest initiative spearheaded by playwright Tiffany Antone and brought to fruition through the collaboration with other passionate playwrights, artistic directors, literary managers, and artists. This cadre of passionate souls have joined forces to cultivate connectivity between creative resistors, organizers, and audiences. Protest Plays Project began as a means of identifying and sharing protest-inspired short plays. Happening now, the focus is on theater action on gun control. In coordination with Protest Plays Project's nationwide gun control theater action and Phoenix Theater, Gollum Productions will hold a benefit reading of short plays about gun violence and the necessity of responsible gun control legislation. The reading will include pieces from the collections Gun Control Plays and After Orlando, as well as a selection of the powerful 3 to 5 minute plays that playwrights across the country have contributed to Protest Plays Project on behalf of this action. The event takes place this Sunday, March 4th at 7 p.m. Local actors will be reading from plays, and there'll be short interludes of harp playing. There is no set entrance fee, but donations will be accepted for every town for gun safety. For more information on that nonprofit, you can find that at everytown.org. Again, Gun Control Action Plays will be read this Sunday at 7 p.m. at the Phoenix Theater, located at 2605 Hennepin Avenue in Minneapolis. And for next Saturday, March 10th at 7:30 p.m., you can enjoy Cliff Eberhardt at the Ginkgo Coffee House. Singer-songwriter Cliff Eberhardt performs a solo concert in the intimate listening room setting of the Ginkgo Coffee House. Tickets are available online at brownpapertickets.com or at Ginkgo Coffee House, which is located at 721 North Snelling Avenue in St. Paul. Cliff Eberhardt knew by age 7 that he was going to be a singer-songwriter. Growing up in Berwyn, Pennsylvania, he and his brothers sang together and their parents played instruments. His dad introduced him to the guitar and he quickly taught himself to play. Fortunate enough to live by Main Point, which is one of the best folk clubs in the East Coast, he cut his teeth listening to the likes of James Taylor, Joni Mitchell, Bruce Springsteen, Howlin' Wolf, Muddy Waters, and receiving an early and impressive tutorial in acoustic music. At the same time, he was also listening to great pop songwriters like Cole Porter, the Gershwins, and Roger and Hart, which explain his penchant for great melodies and clever lyrical twists. His releases include a variety of styles that span the years of 1995 to 2012, ranging from folk, singer, songwriter, to jazz, to musical. His recordings speak to the wide range of talents and broad appeal. So consider adding Cliff Eberhardt Concert to your to-do list next Saturday, March 10th at 7:30 p.m. at the Ginkgo Coffee House. That's Art Beat for the Week. I'm Lori Fitz from Connections Radio Show, airing live Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950. The DFLers in District 44B were caught by surprise last month when Representative John Applebaum decided he was not going to run. This is Minnetonka, Plymouth, Woodland, those type of areas. And suddenly, John decided he was not going to be seeking re-election. And that has thrown the race wide open. And right now, we do have one candidate who has entered into the race. Patty Acomb is currently a Minnetonka City Council member, and she joins us now to talk about it. Hi, Patty. How are you doing?
Well, hi, Mike. I'm doing well. Thank you so much for inviting me to join you and your listeners this afternoon.
Good to have you on here. As I mentioned, this was a surprise announcement by Representative Applebaum. I don't think you had no inkling that this was coming, did you?
No, I didn't. It took me absolutely by surprise. I did not have running for the House District 44B seat on my radar for this year. And I think that timing is everything. And luckily, I think my experience on the Minnetonka City Council and my long history in the community makes this time a good time. And so having run some campaigns for the city council, I've got a little knowledge under my belt that will hopefully serve me well in the next couple of weeks. I guess it's a week from tomorrow is the convention. So I'm running quick.
March 10th. And so this is not your typical race where you're out trying to get the general public to vote for. You've got a limited number of people who have been selected as delegates who are going to the convention. So that's obviously your focus. But I want to step back one thing. This is a big undertaking, running for the state house. Why did you decide to jump in?
Well, I have been, as I said, I've been on, or as you said too, I've been on the Minnetonka City Council for the last 6 years, and I have always had kind of public service as a part of who I am. I've always been involved in the community, and I've really enjoyed doing what I've been doing, and feel like I've been effective here for the residents of Minnetonka. And so you're right. This is kind of it's that next level, and I think that my experience has set me up to be up to that challenge. And so as I kind of contemplated this in my mind, I reached out to some people whose experience I respect and who have done this before. And former Representative John Benson has been generous enough to help me and guide me and mentor me a little bit in this process, and as well as former Senator Terry Bonoff. So I feel like I've got some great experience and people who have been down this path before that are offering me some guidance and some tips along the way.
Now, obviously, it takes a lot of time, and it will eventually take money to run an election like this, provided you get the DFL endorsement, which, if there are no other candidates in the race right now, that would seem to give you a leg up on it, at least at the moment. But politics is about passion. What are you passionate about? Why do you get up in the morning and want to be involved at this level?
Yeah, I think that there are certain things in life that drive me, and it's probably some of the issues that I would be most passionate about. And my educational background and professional work was in natural resources, and so one of my passions is our environment. And we're the land of 10,000 lakes here in Minnesota, and so I think it's important that we're working to ensure we are protecting our groundwater and our surface water, and so the issues surrounding the environment are the reason that I get up every day. And I want to make sure that we have an environment that is healthy to pass on to that next generation. And, I have two kids that are in the public schools, and I have a keen eye toward education. And I'm a product of Hopkins High School myself, where my kids are now attending. And I think we have such a great reputation for having great quality public education here in Minnesota. And I want to ensure that continues, and that when all kids graduate, they're prepared for that next phase in life. And then I think, lastly, the issue that's probably pushing me most right now is healthcare. And I'm a breast cancer survivor, and I had great health insurance and great health care and was diagnosed early. So I have a great prognosis going forward. And I think that as we all deserve that. And so I think that I want to fight hard to ensure that everybody can have the same situation that I did, where they can get good health care and it's affordable and they can have a good future going forward.
The other party here, the Republicans, have been trying to kill Minshew. They have been trying to kill Obamacare. Obviously, you get into the fall election, this is going to be one of the things that come up, and the point is going to be, oh, we're spending way too much money, and it's government control of our health care. What's your base? I mean, that's the basic Republican line. So what's your response to something like that?
Yeah, you know, I don't know that I actually have a solution. I think it's probably going to take some creativity and innovation. I think that it's worth fighting for. And, you know, there are certainly things that we can point to that are areas that we could improve upon. And I think about, you know, negotiating pharmaceutical costs or working toward prevention and keeping people healthy. So, I mean, I think there are always going to be obstacles, but it's a fight worth fighting.
It often gets phrased as Medicare for all is a solution. Some people, and Senator John Marty says that's a misnomer, that Medicare is just one way of doing it. What you really want is to make sure that everybody has health care. But basically government, you know, government-funded or a government insurance program for health care. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, again, like I said, I don't know that I have a final solution, that there's one way to fix it. I think we need to get the costs under control and bring the healthcare costs down. And I think it's, you know, they're rising at such a high rate that we need to figure out a way to get the costs down. And I guess I don't have one final solution. I don't know that that's the only way to do it. I think we need to be creative and work toward improvements where we can find them.
Now, the other issue you mentioned here was education. It's been a battle. Governor Dayton has really wanted to fund early education, make sure that happens. You join him on that fight? Or, I mean, obviously it will be a different governor when you get in there, but where do you weigh in on education right now and trying to fund early education?
Yeah, you know, I think that early education is so important, and I think that so many kids don't have an option or don't have access to that. So I certainly would be in favor of expanding early education, especially to those kids that don't have it available to them. I will say in our Hopkins School District, we have a great program where we provide a preschool opportunity for kids in that receive, I think that also get free and reduced lunch. And it has proven to be a real benefit going long term. And I think there are markers that they try to reach by third grade and so forth. And this preschool opportunity has proven to be very successful in getting all kids to that level on time.
The environment you mentioned is another important area. A couple, you know, big fights that have been going on in that area. Some of them between Republican and Democrats, some of them between Democrats and Democrats. We've had Governor Dayton fighting the Republicans over what are known as buffer zones, another way to just basically try to prevent agricultural runoff from getting into our groundwater. And then we also have the fight that's going on between environmentalists and mining interests in the range area over the Polymet, possibility of doing sulfide mining up there. Where do you stand on these issues?
Well, I am a big proponent of the buffer zones. I serve on the board of the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and so that's been a project that they have been working on along with the governor. And I think that if we can, you know, even provide a small buffer strip to help and curb the amount of contaminants that are running into our stormwater and into our surface water, I think that's a win-win. I think it's any change is difficult, and I have certainly learned that being on the Minnetonka City Council. Change is hard, and people don't like change. But I think that if we can slowly implement some best practices and carry them throughout the state, I think we can do a good job of working toward improving our water quality. And I think there are some areas that are really of high concern, and I think they're focusing much of their efforts on those areas. And so I think that's great. I think the whole PolyMet issue is a divisive one, and it's a hard issue. And I certainly want to ensure that we're protecting our boundary waters, and yet I do understand the economic issues of the area and the job issue. And so I guess, you know, I am not supportive of mining near the boundary waters. I would want to ensure that if that were to ever happen, that we are doing our utmost to protect that resource and to make sure that the mining companies are putting money aside to protect or to fix anything that might happen. I am not in favor of it, but I'm also a realist, and I think that there's, you know, at least a potential that this might happen. So I want to make sure we're safeguarding in every possible way we can.
We're speaking with Minnetonka City Council member Patty Akam, who is running for the DFL endorsement for the seat being vacated by John Applebaum in 44B in the Minnetonka area. Let's talk about one of the big issues that hit the legislature this week, and that was a hearing on some gun violence prevention bills that have been languishing in committee because Republicans had not let them come forth. They got a hearing. They got tabled this week. I don't know if you got to see any of it, but I'm wondering what your thoughts on the whole idea of trying to pass some, you know, gun laws here that would take the guns out of the hands of people who might do damage.
Right. Well, I will just have to say I was so upset when I heard about the latest shooting in Florida, and then I just became so hopeful when these incredibly courageous young people stood up and started demanding change and begging for change, and people started listening, and I was hopeful that we would finally get something to make a difference, to keep our schools safer, to keep our communities safer. And then when Minnesota had the hearings, and I wasn't able to see the hearings, but I did see on the front page of the paper this morning that the bills were tabled. And I'm disappointed that this momentum that was happening is not being realized at this time. I'm hopeful that that the fight isn't over, and that we will continue to push for just really common sense reforms around back checks and military style weapons. My husband and my son are sportsmen and they hunt, and I'm not in any way indicating that we should be taking guns out of everybody's hands, but I think there are some common sense things we can do to make a real a difference and make our community safer.
Now, if you get elected to the legislature next time around, this bill or these subjects are probably going to come up again. We've seen that this is not just a Democrat versus Republican split. There's also a rural-urban split. If you are in the legislature and you want to push for, you know, solutions in this area, how are you going to reach out to those who are on the other side, whether they're Republicans or they're from rural Minnesota, who just may not be open to doing some of the things that are being bantied about right now?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And I think that community engagement is always a huge piece of the puzzle. And without that, it's hard to come up with solutions or compromises. But I will say that in my time on the city council, I have certainly reached out to the community and sought their input and have had an open door, open phone for them to provide it. And so, I my husband and I lived in northwestern Minnesota for a number of years, and I feel very comfortable in the metro and very comfortable in greater Minnesota. And so I would do whatever I could to reach out to those people that I knew and the communities that I'm familiar with, and hopefully others would reach out to me as well, and I'm more than happy to talk with them about it.
Well, you've only got a few weeks here to talk to people before the for the convention, March 10th. 44B is the district. John Applebaum has decided not to run, and we've been talking to Minnetonka City Council Member Patty Akam, who is running for the DFL endorsement. If you are in Minnetonka, Plymouth, or Woodland, she would like to be your next representative. And you can find out more about her at pattyakam.com. Isn't that correct?
Yes, it is. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you this afternoon. And I will say it's not a few weeks, as you had said, where it's a week from tomorrow is the convention.
That's right.
So time is coming up quick.
It's coming up. Thank you for the correction on that. It is coming up quick, March 10th. Well, Patty, thank you so much for your time today.
Mike, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. Folks, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, your phone calls, 952-946-6205. I want to revisit something from yesterday, and I think you may have a thought about it as well. Back in a few minutes.
Find your place in a community you'll love. Free guidebooks at Holiday and paradeofhomes.org. Sponsored by U.S. Bank.
Parade of Homes, where dream homes come true.
Paradeofhomes.org.
This is Dan Brooks, Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor with RBC Wealth Management. For the past 19 years, I've been managing wealth for individuals, institutions, and corporate retirement plan sponsors. Throughout my career, I have seen common traits in successful investors. They include the courage to be diversified, the willingness to work with a professional, the discipline to follow a plan, and patience. I welcome the opportunity to help contribute to your financial success. Call me at 612-371-2396.
As with their Eat Street sister on Nicollet Avenue, the Bad Waitress at 700 Central and Northeast is committed to working with local purveyors and serving organic food whenever possible. But the Northeast location is a bit more grown up. This finer diner has a full bar serving craft cocktails and a brand new inventive dinner menu, including the chicken and waffle, with roasted half chicken, bourbon pickled jalapeno corn waffle, and a roasted poblano gravy. Check out the Northeast menu at thebadwaitress.com.
This is Pat with PJW Automotive in New Brighton. I've been in business long enough to know that if you want to stand out, you better be the best. That's why I've assembled a top-notch team of automotive specialists who do the job right the first time. Bringing your car or truck to PJW Automotive is an investment in the future of your vehicle. Try us once and you'll see it's worth the drive to PJW Automotive. One exit north of 694 on 35W and online at pjwauto.com.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950. Now, yesterday, if you were by your computer or down at the state capitol, you could have watched the hearing that we were just talking about last segment on the gun control bills or the anti-gun violence bills, however you want to put it, gun violence protection bills. These are the first bills that have been discussed in the legislature in a long time that have anything to do with trying to address the problem of gun violence, at least that they got a hearing. And it was, you know, it's a very emotional hearing, and it's posted over at theuptake.org and as well as AM950's Facebook page. But in there, and also on, you know, separated out is some testimony from St. Louis Park High School junior Ava Goldfarb. We played some of this yesterday, but I just want, in case you missed it, I wanted you to listen to it because she just cuts through the BS here. She's talking about people who are complaining there's a burden on them with getting a handgun, and she addresses that.
A big theme that I've heard in people's testimonies, as well as conversations I've had with people outside in the halls, is the theme of this burden that these bills impose on them, of having to go through longer and more bureaucratic processes that make it harder. But if I'm being honest, we have a burden too. It is a burden for us to go through these lockdowns regularly. It is a burden for us to have to plan walkouts. It is a burden for us to wake up and go about our regular lives with the fear that we may be shot. It is far beyond just a burden for us and these families of victims to grieve the losses of their loved ones. So with all due respect, and I don't want to minimize the validity of this burden, but my safety and the safety of my peers and the safety of everyone is worth the burden. Thank you for your attention.
As you can hear, what she said was pretty well received, again, by a bunch of orange-shirted folks who were there to support her. The other side of the room was kind of just stony-faced. But this is a high school junior. I don't think I represented myself that well when I was a junior in high school, much less under this kind of pressure. Because she was talking about, earlier in her testimony, and again, you should watch all of this, but earlier in her testimony, she was talking about how she and her classmates have the same dream, a nightmare about somebody showing up at their school and just opening fire. I don't know about you. High school for me was, you know, tough enough, worrying about just all the things you worry about. And then you throw social media on top of that these days. And then this. I mean, going to school these days just has to be one of the most stressful things ever. And it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't. Yet here we are. And why are we here? Why are we like this? It's not like the United States. It's not like this happens anywhere else in the world where we have, you know, gunmen walking in and opening fire at a school or some other place. It doesn't happen elsewhere. I mean, at least not as often as it does here in the United States. And no matter how you slice it, no matter how you dice it, it's about the guns that are out there. Because when you take the guns out of the equation like you have in other countries, you don't end up with this. Somebody's got to do something. And that, I hope, is you. Get involved. People are listening. Keep the pressure up. We'll be back on Monday. I'm Mike McEntee. Talk to you then.